ETL Echo presents Lost and Found by Kiyono Miko. Chapter 5. First spell. Hermione watches Draco search the recesses of his mind. What started as light conversation has turned into an informative tit-for-tat, revealing details to each other in turns. Hermione has gained some understanding of who Draco is, outside the redeemed Death Eater, recovering bully, and raging snarkaholic that she knows him to be. After some contemplation, Draco answers,
Aguamenti.
Really? She scrunches her face in confusion, trying to imagine a reason a child would not start their accidental magic with something more simplistic, levitating a sweet from a high counter or something. Seems an odd choice. He shrugs in concession, but explains,
I accidentally set fire to Mother's Aubusson rug. It seemed the best way to fix it.
That doesn't sound accidental. She accuses with a smirk. How old were you?
6. No, 7. I think 7. I'd heard my father use the charm to fill our koi pond after a renovation. I think the panic pushed my magic, even without a wand. So, accidental on purpose, I suppose.
Hermione flops back against the sofa, letting out a huffed laugh. Incredible. I wish I'd known what was happening to me back then, she adds wistfully. She can hardly fathom what it would have been to understand all the strange things that happened around, and because of her, at that age.
What was yours?
He asks, and she must admit he seems sincere in his interest. Hermione blushes. I turned a boy's hair green when he made fun of my lunch pail. Draco let his mouth quirk into the boyish smirk she knows so well. But was it always that charming? Does she see him differently because they have been having a civil and enlightening few days? Or has it changed, morphed into something friendly and sincere?
You vindictive little witch, he says with humor. And how old were you?
6. He looks impressed.
Pretty solid charms work for someone who didn't even know what a charm was.
Imagine what I could have done if I'd known an actual spell, she quips. He doesn't react as she would have expected. Instead of a small laugh or a returned jab, he looks contemplative.
I don't know if the wizarding world could have handled a more powerful Hermione Granger, but it would have been a sight to see.
It sounds like a devastatingly profound compliment, so Hermione takes it as such and answers softly, Thank you.
Why did you break it off with Weasley?
Of all the personal questions they've asked, this is new territory. Hermione's head snaps up to look at him, finding his face impassive in a way that is purposeful. There is no reason, after the way that Draco has been behaving the past 2 days, to suspect that he is trying to find a way to ridicule her. So she takes a breath and answers honestly. We don't want the same things, and I couldn't see that leading anywhere but heartbreak. He nods in understanding, but seems to be looking for more. When she hesitates, he prods.
What future was it that he saw and you couldn't share?
Hermione tilts her head to the side, working out how best to answer, without making Ron sound terrible. He's still her friend, after all. A dear and beloved friend, even if his boyfriend potential was low. Ron is an easily satisfied person, in some regards. He has his sights set on a position with his brother at the joke shop once we've finished Hogwarts. He won't be made a partner, but George offered him management once he franchises. Ron's quite excited at the prospect. They open the shop at 11 and close at 6, so he can have a lie-in and never work too late into the evening. It's a stable and predictable career choice with virtually no risk and moderate reward.
Draco nods. And you?
She grins at him, but answers with sincerity. Oh, I'm going to be minister someday. He's surprised into a laugh, but there is no derision there. More shocked delight.
I wouldn't bet odds against you, Granger. So basically, you're an ambitious, ruthless, vindictive witch, as we've previously established, and need someone a bit less complacent.
I'm not that vindictive, she denies, with a bit of a pout. He raises a brow and says simply,
In a jar, Granger,
in reference to her Rita Skeeter confession, which brings her faded blush right back to full force. Trying to take the focus off herself, Hermione asks, So what about you and Parkinson? And regrets it immediately. Does she really want to hear about his romps with that nasty little snot?
and that sentiment surprises her even more. Why should she care at all? In reality, she knows why. She's just firmly entrenched in denial. He looks bemused.
Pansy, we were hardly the happily ever after potential of you and Weasley. It was brief, casual, and childish, and neither of us had any delusions. It was more than an alliance with snogging benefits.
Just snogging? The fuck, Hermione? In her head, she's mortified at herself for even asking. His eyes go a little wide, and Hermione can see she seems to have honestly floored him with the question. He licks his lips before answering.
Snogging, and perhaps a bit more inventive use of our mouths.
Without missing a beat, he counters.
And Weasley? Snogging or more?
Hermione looks him in the eye when she answers, bold but softly. More.
How much more?
His voice has taken on a low and rough quality, and he still holds her gaze. The air feels close, like it has weight, and she is trapped in this moment. Her mind wanders, not where it should, into memories of her and Ron sneaking quick indulgences at the Burrow over the summer, but to the morning just hours before, grinding against the wizard currently staring her down with a look like hunger. She stands, looking for an escape from the tension that threatens to drown her or send her down a path she isn't sure she should want to take. We never had dinner, she announces. We should eat before it's too late. He nods, not moving from his seat, legs crossed over his knee and eyes partially obscured as he looks up through his fringe. Hermione turns on the spot, curls flying over her shoulder, and retreats, mind racing toward the quickly approaching end of their day and a single bed to share. Excitement and nerves at war, she makes herself a plate of the room's offerings and sits on the cushions around the table, with her back to a still-staring Malfoy. She can feel his gaze like heat, and her heart races as she picks at a meager dinner of fruit and bread. The remainder of the evening is spent in tense but friendly silence. Perhaps contemplation would be the correct word. Hermione isn't sure if it's mutual or only in her own raging mind, but her thoughts are cycling around her partner and the intimate conversation they'd danced around. The look he had given her. Well, there can be no mistaking there was more than curiosity in his gaze. When it is time to retire for the evening, their third and final night together living in this strange fantasy, she takes a little more than usual time to ready herself, anticipation driving her to both preparatory and procrastinating extra steps. When she circles the divider that splits the room and hides their bed from the view of her ladies, she finds Draco already tucked beneath the sheets, his bare chest partially visible and one arm tucked behind his head. She blushes at the sight of him and feels foolish for it all the same. Hermione approaches what has become her side of the bed and lifts the sheet to slide her legs beneath, puffing out the candle by her bedside. She is slow and purposeful in movement, suddenly aware of her own lines and curves in a way she hadn't been since her first fumbling physicalities with Ron. Does her arched back present her chest just so? If she flexes her calf and points her toes, does the angle of her leg speak to the tension of a body in the throes? When her tongue flicks out to wet the corner of her mouth, tasting the bit of mint paste she just used to clean her teeth, does he notice? Does his mind wander to other uses he might have for that tongue? Tingling and aware, she settles onto her side, back to the wizard, and tries to relax into her position. When she works her hips to settle into the mattress, is there a bit more grinding than is necessary? When the satin slips off her shoulder, should she lift it to hide the skin gaping at her loosened collar? She stares wide-eyed into the near dark of the room, seeing nothing, yet unable to close her eyes. She breathes slow, counting her exhales, lest her chest heave with the short, quick pants to which she would likely succumb. In the dark, he says softly,
"Tomorrow, then."
She catches his meaning and glances back over her shoulder, finding only the faintest outline of him in the residual glow of a single candle beyond the screen. Tomorrow. Do you think we've really been here for days? Or has the passing time just been an illusion of the room? There is a long silence, she assumes as he considers the question. Finally, he answers,
Seems as though it would be dangerously tempting magic if no time had passed. We could spend countless lifetimes here and never age.
Hermione turns that over in her mind,
allowing herself to briefly envision what that might mean. They could indulge any fantasy for as long as they want, with no repercussions from their real lives. She turns a bit more, feeling her blouse pull across her breast and wondering if he can see it at all, hoping against her better judgment that he can. First kiss? She can see his head jerk to look in her direction, startled by the question, and thinks she sees his mouth stretch into a crooked grin.
Technically?
She laughs and quips back. Well, not your mother or anything like that. He snorts in turn, sounding amused.
Not what I meant, Granger. But technically, it was Daphne Greengrass, and we were 7.
She giggles a little, but doesn't have time to respond before he continues.
But truly? Pansy. In 3rd year. Behind the greenhouses.
So she was your first everything? She asks, unable to stop herself. Hermione closes her eyes, not actually wanting to know the answer. He's quiet again, then says, a confession in the dark.
Not everything. I've not had a first everything yet.
Oh. She supposes he had implied as much in their game of questions from before. Waiting for the right witch? He chuckles and agrees.
Something like that. And yours? Who stole the first kiss of Hermione Granger?
She grins, remembering just briefly the moment in her past. Victor.
Of course, Crumb. War heroine and celebrity boyfriends. Only the best for you.
She thinks there is a little something bitter underneath, but he's trying to sound playful. She allows him the front and ignores the bite. Of course. I'm an only child, Draco. I never settle. I'm sure you understand. He laughs softly, and Hermione turns a bit more, so she is comfortable on her back.
Yes, that I understand.
And was Pansy the best? The following quiet, his silent pause, makes her regret continuing their game. Has she crossed a line? Hermione is treading dangerous and uncharted waters. Will he be offended? Intrigued? She's not sure she's ready for either.
It's hard to say for certain,
he works out slowly.
But I have a feeling there is better out there.
She feels the bed shift as he turns and sees him propped up on one elbow, looking down at her. Breathing slowly is becoming a chore, a battle she is losing to the tension in her limbs. How far is she willing for this to go? Only the best for Draco Malfoy, she whispers, and then feels his large, soft hand trail her cheek.
It seems we have that in common. Maybe we just expect what we have to offer.
She whimpers. It's completely incoherent, and she feels like a fool, but she does it anyway. Her words are failing her, so she lifts a hand to lay against his, trapping him as he cups her cheek.
Can I kiss you?
She thinks only briefly to ask, why? The ever-present curse of being a teenage girl and all the self-doubt contained therein, clenching at her with questions and distrust. But no amount of doubt is able to erase the very real fact that she wants this. It's a feeling like thirst, more than the discovery of young love or the pull of a crush. Has she ever truly wanted anything before this? It feels like whatever it could have been must have been pale and colorless in comparison. So she nods, knowing he can barely see but will feel the motion in his fingertips. She doesn't believe she had hesitated, but the eagerness in his movement makes her feel sluggish in turn. Draco presses his mouth tightly against hers at first, then eases back and narrowly parts his lips, working them softly with her own. Her own kiss is far from hesitant, though gentle in response to his delicate movement. It is a kiss that takes time and learns, evolves in action and changes meaning. What started for only a moment as desperate quickly turns to exploration. Hermione is learning what it is to kiss Draco Malfoy, to want him and be desired. She can feel it in the grip of his fingers tilting her jaw, in his leg that is snaked between hers and is running a line up her calf. She feels something shift, the air around them so heavy she can feel it suffuse her to the bed just as Draco's body lays more firmly atop hers. The kiss deepens, and they are no longer learning, not discovering anything. They have found all they needed, and now it is a conflict, lips sucked and tongue pushed roughly with the other. She feels like he is eating her alive, and she races to consume him first. When he shifts again, he is pressed hard into the cradle of her thighs, arms trapping her beneath him as he continues to taste her with urgency. Hermione is caressing the lean lines of his back, following his angles until her hands find his arms, taut and straining, and she wraps her palms around him, holding him in place for fear he might disappear or pull away. She is gripping him as sure as he is caging her. Frantic is the next inevitable stage. Hermione feels her hips move, a rhythm built on instinct, and his own answer back. She whimpers, and he moans, quiet sounds humming into the dark. His mouth leaves hers, and it makes her whine in disappointment, until his tongue finds the hollow of her throat, fingers deftly unlooping the top two buttons of her blouse and pushing the fabric open. She responds with hands circling his neck, fingertips carding through and tugging at the short hair at his nape. He grunts in vague approval, continuing with his tongue on her clavicle, running a line across the bone, and ending with a wet kiss on her shoulder. She lifts her hips again, pressing against him shamelessly.
"Fuck, Granger."
His forehead drops to the curve of her neck, and she feels his breath, hot and coming fast, puff against her skin. Grabbing his head between her greedy hands, she pulls him up only to slam her lips to his once again, whimpering once more. They continue, licking and sucking at one another, abandoning each other's mouths only briefly to explore necks and jaws, before returning to this seemingly endless kiss. They might continue for hours, or perhaps it is much more brief. Hermione loses all sight of their circumstances, of the room, of the phantoms of witches sleeping on the other side of a silk and wood screen. Finally, when they slow down in tandem, seeming instinctually to agree they have reached a moment that requires words, Hermione pulls away and lays her head on the pillow, looking up at Draco with bright but lidded eyes.
"Maybe we should try to sleep. You have a big day tomorrow, what with turning into a sheep and all that."
He chuckles, breathing hard and fringe falling in his face, ticking the tip of Hermione's nose.
"And you, turning into a duck, apparently."
Grinning, she reaches up and brushes the hair from his eyes.
"See you in the morning, then?"
With one last gentle kiss, Draco extracts himself from between her legs and settles beside her.
"In the morning. Good night, Granger."
She turns on her side, settling in, and feels him shift just behind her. Without any pretense of sleep, he spoons into her back, arms slung over her waist, and Hermione scoots to meet him, flush along his frame.
"Night, Draco."
With a contented exhale, she has no problem finding sleep. The body of a handsome wizard fitted snugly with her own. Draco is the first to wake, and he is grateful for it. It affords him the luxury of studying Granger's face in sleep, of caressing down the soft skin of her arm, of fingertips dancing across the swell of her breast, revealed subtly between the buttons he himself had undone. A lesser man, i.e. a fucking stupid one, might have taken the opportunity to sneak away, but Draco has no intention of letting this chance slip by. He doesn't intend to let her regret it either. No, what he wants is to explore this further, to find the potential he might have with Hermione Granger. And, as a Malfoy, he is rather accustomed to getting what he wants. With careful movements, Draco brushes stray curls from her forehead, sweeping the strands behind the shell of her ear. Without considering the fallout, unwilling to entertain she will be anything but receptive, he bends over her and lays a gentle kiss on her lips. She stirs, but doesn't wake, so he does it again, and again, until eventually she is slowly kissing him back, and he has woken her with a kiss.
"Morning, Granger," he mumbles, lips still touching and muffling his words.
She smiles against his lips and returns.
"Good morning. Ready for your big performance?"
"As the sheep or the handsome adventurer?"
She pulls back to look at him and chuckles.
"Well, handsome should come naturally for you."
He grins, preening at the compliment, but counters.
"I don't know. I think I made a pretty convincing sheep."
That earns a heartier laugh and a surge of confidence that sends her leaning up and kissing him with purpose. Draco doesn't need any convincing to reciprocate, and soon they are reliving a slightly tamer version of the night before.
"Daughter? Oh, daughter! Are you awake, my darling Blossom?"
Draco groans in disappointment, laying his forehead against Granger's. "We're picking this up later," he grumbles, hardly realizing the expectation, the assumption of the sentiment. It's only in hindsight and after her very welcome, "Merlin, yes," that he realizes what a victory it has been. She agreed. Holy fuck, he's going to get more, taste more of Hermione Granger. Something he's not really known he wanted, and now feels a fool for almost missing his chance. Draco thinks he needs to send Professor Jane a fucking fruit basket or something.
"Be right there, Father."
Granger is shoving lightly at Draco's chest, extracting herself from his hold. He watches as she buttons her top, and he mouths, "Pity," at her, as the skin vanishes beneath the white cotton, the effect of which is to make her smile and look away. Which, by the way, is fucking endearing. Once she is properly righted, Granger tosses the sheep wool at him, brow arched in a challenge. This is so asinine. He puts on the damn pelt, knowing the advancement of the plot gets him that much closer to snogging Granger again.
"Ready?"
she asks in a whisper, and Draco nods in turn, feeling anxious and eager to move this along. She rounds the room divider, and Draco follows just behind. "Ah, my most beautiful girl. I'm afraid I have come to take away your pet, my dear. The merchant is waiting to collect him and continue on his journey. I trust he has provided a welcome distraction." Draco watches the witch, and her cheeks suffuse with pink. He smirks in her direction. Distraction indeed.
"It was,"
she agrees, and looks through her lashes at Draco. The king claps his hands and rubs them together.
"Well then, shall we be off, Sir Lamb? Pip, pip, no use in dallying."
Draco follows the king to the silver brick wall, watching as the segments shift into place. There had been magic words when he first arrived, a poorly constructed excuse of a spell, nonsense words that surely have no meaning. He has taken care to remember them, knowing it is part of the story that he returns to claim his witch. Oh, he's going to fucking claim her, all right. Draco feels giddy. He can't wait to get done with this assignment and return to Hogwarts. He's already planning out the broom cupboards, alcoves, and tapestries into which he can steal away with Hermione. He hopes her feelings on the matter won't change when faced with their real lives, and is stubborn enough to pretend the possibility doesn't fucking exist, thanks. Draco follows through the door, looking back once at Granger, to find her biting her lip and looking after him. She looks disappointed to see him go.
Fucking mutual, witch.
He says with his eyes that he will be back as quickly as this god-awful story allows. The bricks slip back into place behind him, her face framed in the center. He watches until he can no longer see her, and he is alone with a mad king in a dim corridor of stone.